The Rush, paragraph of Gimel. Val yetzei l'riv maher. One should not be quick to get involved in a quarrel. V'yisrachek min hashvuos. Umin hanadarim. He should distance himself from oaths and vows. Ki bavon hanadarim, banim mason. Now, the translation I'm using here, Art Scroll, translates bavon hanadarim, for children pass away because of the sin of their parents' unfulfilled vows. That the aveira of nadarim we're talking about is the aveira of taking a vow which you don't keep, or which is a lie. That's the problem. That's what makes children die. And I guess that's what the rush is warning you about. Stay away from shavuos and nadarim, particularly false ones. Stay away from any of them because you may come to make false ones. And indeed, in Chazal, we certainly find in various places in Chazal, Chazal were very uncomfortable. They warned you against taking nadarim and shavuos because the most obvious reason is because you may take false ones. Famous story of Gemara in Gittin. A woman once made a shvua that she wasn't nana. She had a pikadon. Someone had given her money to watch, and she couldn't find it. And she took a shvua that she wasn't nana from it. She didn't steal it. Turned out she had been nana because it accidentally fell into something she was baking, and she saved herself a little flour because when she gave that loaf to an ani, I think, she saved herself a little flour, so her child died. So we're worried about false oaths, even when you mean well, even when you try to be careful, you're not doing it maliciously. Certainly, false oaths are one of the main things that Chazal were worried about. There is, however, also an idea that one should stay away from true oaths too. There is a whole discussion how to interpret the psukim in pasuk of Tov, of Tov asher lo tidar, mishat tidar v'lo tishalim. The Gemara brings machlokas tanoim, whether it's actually better to take oaths and fulfill them, and versus not to take them at all. But nevertheless, there is an idea that developed, certainly historically, after the Talmud. There is an idea that developed that Jews do not take any oaths, even true oaths. What exactly the source of that is, whether it's a gzeira because of false oaths or for another reason, perhaps we'll discuss that a little further tomorrow. But there did develop, certainly in the time of the Acharonim, a very well-established tradition that pious and God-fearing Jews did not take oaths at all. My wife actually was sworn into the New York State Bar this morning. She told me everyone was told just to swear, and she said she affirms, which I think is the custom of Jews in general, to try to avoid saying the word swear, say affirm. One interesting debate about this in halacha comes up in the context of shutfin, of partners. If a shutf is representing the business in Beis Din or court, and it becomes necessary for him to take an oath. Based on our court says, take an oath and you'll win. Otherwise, you'll lose. You have to settle with the other party if you don't take an oath. He says, I don't want to take an oath. Oaths are pious Jews don't take oaths. So on the one hand, you could say, well, okay, pious Jews don't do it, so don't do it. On the other hand, you're being frum on someone else's cheshbon. who said you have the right to be frum on the cheshbon of your other partner? Now, obviously, if it was something that was us or gummer, if the only way to win the case, if the only way to win to save the shutfus was by eating treif or being mechal Shabbos, you couldn't do it. And obviously, you can't do an isser, even if that means another Jew is going to suffer. But here, where it's only a frumkeit that doesn't even have an absolutely clear Talmudic basis, so what's the halacha? Is a person supposed to say, I want to be frum, I want to be extra medakdek and not take a shvua? I want to be marchik min anadarim min hashvuos, even though it's perfectly true? Or do you say, look, do that on your own cheshbon, but don't expect the other shutuf to suffer. You want to pay the other shutuf, whatever you're going to lose, fine, pay out of your pocket. But don't expect to bill him for your frumkeit. This is actually discussed by a number of 19th century achronim. We find basically three positions. We find one position that if you don't swear, you're a mazik, you're garim, but you're dina de garmi, you're considered a direct and proximate enough mazik that you're going to be chayev to pay for any hefset to the shutfas, unless you are the shutf authorizes you to do this. When you're representing the shutfas, you have no right to practice frumkeit, and if you do, you're considered a mazik, and you'll have to pay for it. We find an intermediate position that says that you are not supposed to do this, lechatchila, perhaps you shouldn't do it, you're a garim. You're not going to be chayev because of garmi, because self kol self, the hezek is still shev al taser, it's still kind of indirect. You shouldn't be doing it, but you're not going to be chayev as a mazik. We find a third shita that actually allows you to indulge your frumkeit and to not do this, even if lechatchila you can do it. And the way the Shalom Eshev, the Ben Ishchai, explain the shita, they say, this is l'maisa what God-fearing Jews do. Anyone who enters into a shutfus, the understanding is that the shutfus are going to behave like reasonable, normal people. Reasonable, normal Jews do not swear, even if it's true. So the other shutfus understands that, and he agrees to indemnify you. He agrees to take his share of the responsibility for the consequences of you not swearing.